This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of February 23rd, 2006.
All right, police!
Bad Cop No Donut!
Bad.
Cop.
No. Donut!
He's under law, and I rule.
I'm Ron Anisich with your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption. After this week's headlines, we will be speaking with Veronica Thomas about the case of Ari Redeker and the treatment of people who suffer from mental illnesses by law enforcement. But first, here's a look at what the police did to us this week. An Oakland, California police officer was arrested on Friday after he hit an 18-year-old man. The Contra Costa Times says that Officer Frank Morrow is charged with assault and displaying a firearm. Morrow was allegedly arguing with his daughter at her home when the dispute spilled out into the street. In front of multiple witnesses, some of them children, Morrow pulled out his gun when a neighbor tried to intervene before punching the man in the head. A Rigby, Idaho police officer is under investigation for having sex with the wife of a man who he arrested on drug charges. According to an Associated Press report, the woman accused the unnamed officer of using his position as a police officer to gain access to her home. He had sex with the woman after viewing a pornographic video he discovered in the home. The woman says she met the officer at a motel a few days later and had sex with him again while he was on duty. The Rigby Police Department asked the Idaho State Police to investigate the allegations this week.
The discipline was based on several factors, including that Dean Sprague was a member of the command staff, and at the time this occurred, he was also in charge of traffic enforcement officers. The chief felt it was important to send a message to him and the public that this won't be tolerated by his department.
A police lieutenant in Spokane, Washington, was demoted last week for speeding. KHQ-TV reports that Lieutenant Dean Sprague was a traffic enforcement supervisor. He was caught twice driving at speeds exceeding 100 miles per hour. On one of those occasions, he was on his way to a traffic safety conference. Sprague has been demoted by two ranks to detective. A Nevada Highway Patrol vehicle struck another car, killing four of the car's occupants on Sunday. The Las Vegas Review-Journal reports that an unnamed trooper was driving a cruiser which rear-ended a Cadillac. The exact circumstances of the collision are not known. The trooper was not seriously injured. One passenger in the Cadillac survived. An Indianapolis, Indiana police officer was arrested on Monday trying to fill a forged prescription. WRTV reports that Officer Mark Kai Kendall was taken into custody after a pharmacist became suspicious about the prescription and called the police. A Gary, Indiana police officer was arrested for drunk driving on Saturday. The Northwest Indiana Times says that Officer Shane Bold was arrested after police received complaints about his erratic driving. Bold was discovered by police passed out in the driver's seat of his car, which was in the middle of a road. Bold was driving his police cruiser at the time of his arrest. He refused field sobriety tests, but an almost empty bottle of vodka was recovered from the front seat of Bold's squad car.
99.9% of the time, they're good, hardworking officers working long hours, and we have to really do a better job, I guess, is being able to identify and stress with the officers. And we've been really working hard the last 2 months is if you think you have a problem, if you consider that you have a problem, if the supervisor believes that you have a problem, let's get you help now.
A South Bend, Indiana police officer was arrested on Monday for drunk driving. The South Bend Tribune says that Officer Joseph Musser was arrested while driving his squad car after calls from citizens. His blood alcohol level was twice the legal limit. Musser is the third South Bend officer to face drunk driving charges in the past 2 months. A Melvindale, Michigan police officer was charged last Wednesday with fixing a traffic ticket for a woman in exchange for sex. The Detroit News says that Officer John Aldrich became the subject of a state police investigation after the woman filed a complaint. Aldrich is charged with third-degree sexual conduct and misconduct in office. He was on duty at the time he had sex with the woman last April. He has been suspended since April and is facing 20 years in prison if convicted on both charges. A Jackson, Ohio police officer was suspended with pay last Wednesday for receiving oral sex in a church parking lot while he was on duty. The Akron Beacon Journal says that Officer Troy Ransom is charged with conduct unbecoming an officer and lying to investigators. The woman had already admitted to engaging in sex with Ransom when he denied that the encounter had taken place. An investigation determined that Ransom met with the woman in the church parking lot on September 9th and received oral sex from her in her car before he followed her home, ostensibly to ensure that she made it there safely. Ransom is the sixth Jackson police officer to face internal charges so far this year. He is not facing any criminal charges. A police officer in Toronto was arrested on Thursday after being involved in three drunken crashes in a single intersection. The Toronto Star reports that Constable Gail Shields is charged with failing to remain at the scene of an accident, failure to report damage to property on the highway, failing to report an accident, two counts of failing to stop at an accident, impaired driving, dangerous operation of a vehicle, and other charges. Shields will appear in court next on April 26th. A Swampscott, Massachusetts police lieutenant was suspended for 5 days beginning last Thursday over a January arrest. The Lynn Daily Item says that Officer Peter Cassidy was arrested for impaired driving in Vermont on January 13th. Cassidy has been suspended twice in the past. The reasons for those suspensions are not known. Cassidy was the highest paid employee of the town of Swampscott in 2005. A police officer in Hamden, Connecticut was arrested this week for drunk driving. WTNH reports that Sergeant Keith Benway is accused of overturning his truck and then lying to investigators about who was driving. Benway received awards from Mothers Against Drunk Driving in 2003 and 2004. A police officer in Millville, New Jersey, was arrested last week after an argument with his wife. The Vineland Daily Journal says that Officer Carl Heger is charged with assault, no restraining order was issued, and Heger remains on the job. A police officer in Point Pleasant Beach, New Jersey, is facing new charges in connection with a drunken traffic collision last July. The Asbury Park Press says that Officer Patrick Flynn is now charged with two counts of both second and third degree aggravated assault and two counts of both third and fourth degree assault by auto. Flynn is also facing previous impaired driving and reckless driving charges in the same incident. Flynn was drunk when he drove into another vehicle which had stopped for a bridge opening. Three other vehicles were also struck. 10 people were taken to hospital, 5 with serious injuries. Flynn is currently free on a $100,000 bond. A Jessup, Pennsylvania police officer was arrested on Friday for stealing from a police evidence locker. WNEP reports that Officer Robert Santarelli is accused of stealing a number of items over the past month, including marijuana, hypodermic needles, and a firearm. He's been suspended from his job without pay. A sheriff's deputy in Monongalia County, West Virginia, was arrested on Friday for the sexual abuse of a child. WTRF reports that Deputy Robert Fields is charged with first-degree sexual abuse. A female high school student recently complained that Fields held her down and touched her inappropriately in January 2005. Fields is free on a $10,000 bond and has resigned from his job. A sheriff's deputy in Augusta County, Virginia, pleaded guilty to flashing a woman on Tuesday. The Waynesboro News Virginian says that Deputy Travis Spradlin was accused of sexually assaulting a woman and also exposing his genitals to her on two occasions. The first time was during an August arrest. The second time was during a traffic stop in October. Spradlin was allowed to plead guilty to one count of indecent exposure in exchange for a suspended 12-month sentence. The prosecutor also agreed to drop the other charges against Spradlin. The deputy was fired in December and will not be able to work in law enforcement again in the future. The chief of police in Wilkesboro, North Carolina, was suspended from his job with pay indefinitely last Thursday after being indicted for embezzlement and other charges earlier this month. An Associated Press report says that Chief Gary Parson was indicted by a grand jury on February 6th of charges including obtaining property by false pretense and willfully failing to discharge his duties. He's facing a total of 12 charges. Parsons is free on bond and will appear in court next in April. The chief of police in Bowman, South Carolina, has been accused of sexual misconduct and is now the subject of a state investigation. The Charleston Post and Courier says that Chief Jason Marchant is accused of making sexual advances on three men, two of whom were underaged. The eldest of the three also says that Marchant sexually assaulted him at a police station last month. Marchant is currently on paid leave and has yet to be charged with a crime. Another Bowman officer was charged last year with sexually assaulting a 14-year-old girl on two occasions while he was on duty. Officer Harry Lee Tucker was not certified to work in law enforcement at the time he was arrested. He had failed to make it through the State Police Academy in 2003. Tucker was fired after his arrest. The accusations against these officers has left the town with one rookie police officer, Kevin Pendarvis. State records say that Pendarvis is also unqualified to work as a police officer. A Collier County, Florida sheriff's deputy was arrested last Wednesday for impaired driving. WINK reports that Deputy Scott Anderson is charged with driving under the influence of a controlled substance. He was arrested after he drove his pickup truck into the back of another vehicle which was stopped at a red light. No one was seriously injured in the collision. A police officer in Delray Beach, Florida, pleaded guilty last Thursday to charges that he helped a psychic defraud elderly and seriously ill victims. An Associated Press report says that Officer Jack Mackler pleaded guilty to one count of honest services fraud in exchange for other charges being dropped. He admitted that he lied when questioned by investigators and used his position as a police officer to help the psychic avoid charges. Mackler faces a maximum of 5 years in prison when he is sentenced in May. A Volusia County, Florida sheriff's deputy was arrested on Tuesday after a fight with his wife. The Orlando Sentinel says that Deputy Eric Kempel is charged with domestic battery. He was immediately placed on paid leave. A police officer in Jackson, Mississippi is back on the job after being arrested on drug charges last April. WLBT reports that Officer Lavartez Birch was charged with possession of drug paraphernalia. He was reportedly uncooperative at the time of his arrest. Under a current plea arrangement, Birch will not face any penalty unless he is charged with another crime in the near future. He is back on the job as of last week.
He was contacted while he was at work and detained, if you will, while the search warrant was being executed. Cocaine, methamphetamine, and some marijuana, and some other paraphernalia.
I would pick up a strong odor of marijuana.
Well, I expect that once the investigation is completed and once I have a chance to talk to the prosecuting authorities, that he's exonerated.
You don't think he had anything to do with this?
No.
A police officer in San Antonio, Texas, was arrested last Wednesday for drug possession. KSAT reports that Officer Joseph Evans was arrested after police searching his home found marijuana, cocaine, and methamphetamine. Evans was charged with possession of marijuana. His girlfriend was charged with possession of the other drugs. Evans remains in custody and has been placed on administrative leave from his job. An Elsa, Texas police officer who was arrested for domestic violence in January is back on the job as of last week. KGBT reports that Officer Ismael Gomez was arrested after being accused of beating his wife and one-year-old daughter during an argument. He was reinstated after his wife dropped the charges against him. Gomez is still facing a charge of endangerment to a child. An El Paso, Texas police officer who was arrested in January for sexually assaulting a child was fired last Thursday. An Associated Press report says that Officer Carlos Campos was accused of molesting a 13-year-old girl while he was questioning her about an incident on December 30th. He is charged with indecency with a child. Campos is free on $100,000 bail. A man died on Sunday after being shocked with a taser by sheriff's deputies in St. Tammany Parish, Louisiana. A Daytona Beach, Florida man was hospitalized on Friday after a taser struck a cigarette lighter in his pocket and exploded. Police tried to use the taser on the man after responding to a domestic disturbance at his home. One of the darts from the weapon struck a lighter in the man's pocket, causing it to break and ignite. The man suffered burns to his chest and is in stable condition in hospital. A police officer in Edmonton, Alberta, was charged with assault last week for using a taser on a teenager during a 2003 arrest. Constable Todd Hudek is accused of using the taser on the 17-year-old while he was in a police holding cell after a strip search. A sheriff's deputy in Escambia County, Florida, pleaded guilty last week to a civil rights violation. Deputy Charles Dix admitted that he used excessive force by shocking a woman with a taser four times last February. A second charge of false arrest was dropped in exchange for the guilty plea. Dix is facing 10 years in prison when he is sentenced in May. Police in Avon, Colorado, reported last week that they have been missing one of their tasers since last November. The Avon Police Department does not know what happened to the weapon and are offering a $100 reward for the return of the device. Another taser was lost by a Racine, Wisconsin police officer last week. In that case, the taser was returned by a citizen who found it. Taser International, the makers of the weapon, announced their fourth quarter profits on Wednesday. In the last 3 months of last year, the company made around $90,000 compared with more than $4 million in the same time period last year. The company's sales also dropped by $20 million in 2005 compared with the previous year. The news had a negative impact on Taser shares, which dropped by almost 80 cents on the day of the announcement.
The door was locked, so I was kicking and banging on the door, you know, trying to draw her attention off of her. Neither of them looked my way, you know, and that's when I stepped back. I called 911. Yeah, she had the knife up, dropped the knife, and then a couple seconds later, two shots, pop, pop.
The hallway or the yelling, the smell, but as far as them violently fighting, fist fighting, no, that's never happened.
Other than the killings already reported on this program, police also killed people this week in Antioch, California, Waterbury, Connecticut, New York City, and Jupiter, Florida. Veronica Thomas is a registered nurse in El Monte, California. At one time, she was a co-worker of Ari Redeker, who in 2002 was charged with murdering his ex-girlfriend. Thomas helped uncover many documents which point to failures of both the mental health system in Nevada and the Las Vegas Police Department. Thomas was experienced with dealing with mental health issues because of an illness suffered by her mother and because of her work as a healthcare professional. Earlier today, I spoke with Thomas about the Ari Redeker case.
He was the boss of one of the offices. It was a nationwide home health agency, and he was the boss for one of the branch offices in Nevada, and I was one of the registered nurse supervisors for an office in California.
So you didn't have a lot of direct contact with him at the time, but you knew him to say hi or maybe at a meeting or
yes,
a meeting
exactly.
To do with work. How would you have described him as a coworker?
Very well liked, very down to earth. Got along very well with the employees, and kind of treated all the nurses and, you know, even like the people who were on the like a lower end, maybe like a janitor or something, he would treat everybody the same, and just an all around nice guy.
Were you aware of any mental health issues that he had at that time?
Not at all. No.
Are you aware now that he had issues at that time?
Yes.
Okay, so we can assume that he was taking medication for his condition, which we later learn is he suffers from bipolar disorder.
Yes.
So you're a nurse. Can you tell us a little bit about what bipolar disorder is?
Bipolar disorder is, they sometimes use the term interchangeably, bipolar disorder, manic depressive. And it's a mental illness. And with medication, it can be controlled and people can live normal lives. But without medication, they can have some periods of mania. where they're just too happy, too outgoing, or periods of periods of depression, severe depression.
So that's
the medication kind of balances in between.
Bipolar disorder is not always accompanied by violent behavior, right?
That's true. That's correct.
In fact, it's probably safe to say that most of the time it's not.
That's correct.
But there came a point in 2002, 2 years after you met Ari, where he sought medical attention for his mental illness. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what happened to him.
Back in around 1998 or 1999, I found out that he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, manic depression, and he was taking medication and following up with the doctor, and he actually had a hospitalization back in 1999. In 2000 is when he went and sought treatment. No, 2002, I'm sorry. In Nevada, the state of Nevada, one must obtain what's called medical clearance from a doctor before being admitted as an inpatient at a mental health facility. Medical clearance is supposed to assess for and take care of other medical problems like high blood pressure, and the doctor just gives them an okay that, okay, they can be admitted to a mental health facility.
So Ari goes to a mental health facility, but he can't be admitted until he gets clearance from a doctor, which it turns out in his case is at another facility.
Yes, at the ER.
So he goes to an emergency room.
He went to the mental health facility, and according to the documentation I have, he was diagnosed with hypertension. His blood pressure was high, very high heart rate. He was out of his psychiatric medications for 2 weeks, out of his blood pressure medication, out of another psychiatric medication for 2 days. He was taking three total. He was drinking alcohol for 2 days. Suicide attempt by trying to start his car, by starting his car in the garage a week prior.
So he basically kind of bottomed out and then realized he needed help and had his wits about him enough to realize he needed the help and then attempted to get it.
That's correct. And so the mental health facility called in an ambulance to take him to the hospital ER for medical clearance so that he could be admitted as an inpatient. So the plan was for him to come back in the ambulance and go to the and be admitted as an inpatient at the mental health facility.
So he goes to the emergency room, and what happens there?
Well, the emergency room, from the documentation that I received from the emergency room, it took us. It was quite a battle to get the documentation from the ER, but we managed to get it, and they're saying that he just left after an hour, but they also diagnosed him as being suicidal and needing help. But according to Ari, he waited on a stretcher for 4 hours in the hallway before walking out, and Nevada has had a pretty well-documented history of a mental health crisis over the past few years, so it's more plausible that he was sitting on a cot on a stretcher in the waiting for treatment in the ER before he walked out after 4 hours.
So he goes and he's diagnosed, and in addition to being suicidal, you gave me some indication that when I was speaking with you earlier that he may have been a potential harm to other people as well, and that they diagnosed that.
That's correct. They have like a checkoff box on the documentation, and he had 11 out of 24 suicide risk factors checked off and one homicide risk factor checked off.
What happens then? Do the people at the hospital call the police?
No. He was just left to wander the streets, but his car was still at the mental health facility, so it was the early morning hours of the 20th, October 20th, that he was wandering the streets trying to get home 4 miles away. Okay, well, according to the documentation, they say they contacted him. So they did. They are saying that they followed up the ER by calling his home, and the nurse put in her notes that the patient states that he is not suicidal or homicidal anymore. But they document that they spoke to him an hour and a half after he left the facility, but what they don't realize is that he didn't have his car, and it would have been impossible for him to make it home in an hour and a half, 4 miles away. So I don't believe there was any follow-up at all from the hospital.
So to make a long story short, part of Ari's problems had to do with the person who he had been dating at the time, and this person attempted to help him by picking up his car.
Yes.
And this person ended up dying, unfortunately, at Ari's hands.
Yes.
Maybe before we move on to this, we should deal with some of the documentation you were referring to from the hospital. You indicated that you were able to get medical records. Could you tell us, well, first of all, what was your purpose in trying to get these records? And second of all, how did you do it?
My purpose was, Ari's mother had mentioned that he was in the hospital and that, you know, she had mentioned what happened, and I wanted to see what the documentation said. I just wanted a bigger picture of what happened. I wanted to put the pieces together. I suggested it to his family that we get the records, and they weren't aware that a patient has a right to their medical records. Actually, the patient has to release the medical records. It's only the patient, not really the family. So I wrote Ari in prison and had him sign a waiver saying that the hospital can send the parents the medical records. And the mental health facility sent their records without any problems. But the ER, it took a couple of months to get the records from them, and we had to keep calling them and keep emphasizing that to them that, you know, the patient has a right to their records, and he signed a release. And finally, they gave up the records, which is, theirs was only about 4 pages long.
Were you ever given an explanation for the delay?
No. They're very rude to us, actually.
These events that we're describing with Ari going to the hospital took place in Las Vegas, Nevada.
That's correct.
You're in California.
Yes.
Are Ari's family in California or Nevada?
They are neither. They are in New York.
Okay.
He was born and raised in New York, and he came over to Nevada for a job. I looked the records over. I audited them because I used to do that for part of my nursing career. I used to audit charts, so I was able to recognize a lot of the wording and a lot of the inconsistencies.
Did you have any specific concerns when you saw their paperwork?
For the mental health facility, I didn't really have that much concern because it seemed like their documentation was pretty good. The ER documentation was what concerned me because it just didn't seem to match anything that the mental health facility documentation was saying, and it seemed to miss a lot of the. There seemed to be a lot of blank spaces in the documentation as well. And I can't seem to find a license for the physician that supposedly assessed him. I've been looking for the license online. I can't seem to find one.
Are they normally available online?
Yes.
Hmm.
I can't find that he's ever had one.
Okay, so moving forward again, Ari has killed his girlfriend, and at the point where he's confronted by the police, she's just a missing person as far as the police are concerned.
That's correct.
Because they're concerned about this person being missing, they go to Ari's home. I believe they got a search warrant, and they searched the home.
Actually, no search warrant. They just went right inside.
Without a warrant?
No warrant. They climbed over the fence, entered through a sliding glass door in the backyard under the pretense of a wellness check, and just took a look around, I guess.
And they didn't find Ari because he wasn't there, but shortly thereafter, an officer noticed him drive by the house?
Yes, that's correct.
And what happened then?
They stopped him, immediately handcuffed him, took his wallet away, took his keys away, and detained him under a, quote, investigative detention.
Now, he was handcuffed.
Yes.
So he's handcuffed, he has his possessions taken away, He's sitting in the back of a police cruiser?
Sometimes in the back of a police cruiser, sometimes on the curb, sometimes on the porch of the house.
But always in handcuffs and always with the police directing his every move, and yet he is not considered to be under arrest at this time.
That's correct. But they did take his handcuffs off at one point to have him sign a search warrant, to have him sign a warrant to search the home. But they were already in there, so...
They were aware that he had some mental health issues?
Yes, I was surprised to find that out. In one of the interrogation transcripts, the officer acknowledges that and actually makes fun of it.
So they know he doesn't have medication, hasn't taken medication for days.
That's correct. And he tells them that he needs his medication. He tells them that he was planning to go to the hospital.
But he does, at some point during 6 hours, after 6 hours of questioning, he does confess to strangling his ex-girlfriend.
Yes. They went, after they were done in his home, they took him in the back of the police car to the police station into an interrogation room, I guess that's what they call it, and they interrogated him until he confessed. But I have yet to see the tape because the public defender hasn't had us view it, hasn't let us view it yet. And it's been 3 years.
He confesses and he is not under arrest.
That's correct.
He hasn't been read his rights.
Nope.
And what happens then immediately after he confesses and evidently draws them a map of where to find the body? Then they arrest him and read him his rights.
Yes, and then they asked him to repeat it again.
The reason that we've told this story is because something completely astounding happens after this, and that is that the prosecutor in Nevada decides to charge Ari with capital murder, which means he's facing a death sentence.
Yes, that's correct.
You would think that there would be mitigating factors. You would think that the fact that he sought help for a mental illness, that he was diagnosed as being a problem, that the police did not Mirandize him, that the police knew he had a mental health issue for which he was not taking medication. You'd think all of these things would be mitigating factors. Has anything happened in the courts to reduce the chances that he's going to face the death sentence for this?
With regards to everything you just said, no. Nothing has come up about that.
When is his trial scheduled to start?
His trial is now scheduled for July. It's been postponed many times. I'd like to add, too, that the confession that the police managed to get out of him doesn't even match the autopsy report that I managed to get.
In what ways does it differ?
It doesn't say that she was strangled.
How?
There's no ligature marks on her neck. Her hyoid bone is intact. Her thyroid's intact. The coroner is not able to determine that she was strangled. Yet he's facing a death penalty trial for confessing to strangling her. So.
When that may, in fact, not be what happened.
Well, I asked Ari why he says that to the police, and he says that he was tired of them yelling at him, and he just wanted to be left alone, and he told them what they wanted to hear because they kept questioning him about a phone cord that they found in the trash can.
This story raises a couple of serious issues, and one of them is the way that the police treat people who are mentally ill. This is something that comes up in the news quite often in quite a few places. It just seems to me that when a person breaks their arm, You don't call the police. And it seems that when people are confronted with somebody with a mental illness, they don't think twice about doing that. They don't stop and think, maybe this person needs some kind of help other than what a police officer may be able to offer them.
I think that when somebody is confronted with a mentally ill person, they need trained professionals at the scene rather than a gun-toting cop shouting orders to someone who may not be in the right state of mind to be compliant.
But this case is a little worse because it seems like they kind of coerced a confession out of him. The way you described him just saying that he just wanted them to stop yelling. I mean, to me, that means that he probably would have said anything at that point.
Yes, and being without medication or treatment for so many days also probably played a huge factor. Police were well aware that he had a mental health crisis and went untreated. So I feel that as though they took advantage of the situation. I mean, if they had done this to a person who wasn't in a mental health state, it would be appalling. But just the fact that they did this to someone who was in a mental health crisis is just horrifying.
Do you think that the staff in the hospitals where Ari tried to seek help have any responsibility for the outcome?
I do. I think that measures should have been taken to prevent him from leaving the hospital. As a registered nurse, I know that if we feel that somebody is a danger to themselves or others, we take the appropriate steps to make sure that they don't leave and they're not in the community. It's just our job. In Nevada, they have had such a mental health crisis. There's news reports from before Ari's arrest all the way up to today about the mental health crisis.
Do you know what the reasons behind the crisis are?
I believe it's a lack of funding and just emergency rooms being overcrowded with people needing medical clearance. And then even when they do get the medical clearance, there's no room for them at the mental health facilities. So I think it's a lack of funding.
Ari Redeker is awaiting his death penalty trial, which is currently scheduled to begin in July. Thanks to Veronica Tomas for taking the time to speak with us. That's all for Bad Cop No Donut this week. Feel free to send in your comments and story ideas. The email address for this program is ron@ckln.fm. Thanks to everyone who sent in articles for this week's show. Bad Cop No Donut is produced at CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto and can be heard in Santa Cruz, California on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM and in Nanaimo, British Columbia on CHLY 101.7 FM. I'm Ron Anisich. Thanks for listening.
AC/DC, what time is it? If you want to get together, then you better find a better fit. The first world's first, what's new? Not much, don't touch. It's a world full of cops. Cops backstage and cops in the wings. Cops cared for the benefit of kings. Big brother cops and little sister cops and lots. It's a world full of cops. Cops on the take, taking half of what you got. Driving in the parks and walking the parking lots. Cops that are cool and cops that are hot and lots. It's a world full of cops. Border cops and shore patrol cops on the guard. Military cops and prison cops above the yard. The finest and the fullest and the hardest of the hard and the rest. It's a world full of cops. For the companies and working for the banks, monitoring the airwaves and going through the ranks, out on the highways and in the helicopters way up high. It's a world full of cops. Think tank cops and undercover cops, security surveillance and secret service cops. Cops walking a beat and cops driving through the street. It's a world full of cops. City city cops and state cops and National Guard and Bureau cops and TV cops and movie cops and uniform and plainclothes cops and riot cops and cops on top of cops on top of cops on top of cops. It's a world full of cops.